This is What Does It Profit? And I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. For those of you new to the show, welcome. We are the podcast about the social and moral value of economic life. We've done it. We're more than midway through our third season. We've climbed the face of the mountain, and we're headed down into the holler. For those of you not from Appalachia, this metaphor may be lost on you. Not only are we going to tell you what a holler is, we're going to take you there. In this episode, we're going to West Virginia. And what business do you talk about in West Virginia? Well, the energy business. Yep, we'll talk coal. But we're also going to introduce you to the next generation of miners, those who mine the sun. For centuries, West Virginians have relied on the state's natural resources for their livelihoods.
West Virginia has always been an extraction colony. We started out with salt. There is an underground sea under West Virginia, so we started out extracting salt from our underground. We moved to timber, where, and all of these have been outside landowners that have used West Virginia for what they needed and took the money and left. So the timber industry has done the same. Now West Virginia is the fifth most tree-covered state in the Union. At one time, it looked like nuclear bombs have went off because every tree was taken down.
That's Elizabeth Opyoke, a Gen Xer who comes from a long line of coal miners. We visited with Elizabeth and her dad, Joe, in her home in Marion County, West Virginia. We wanted to learn more about what it means to be a West Virginia mountaineer in the energy business, yesterday and today. When I think about the work of coal miners, I picture deep, dark, cramped, and lonely places where men squeezed into tight and toxic spaces to bring us the coal that powered our lives. Coal has always been a dirty and dangerous business. The miners know this, but it pays well and doesn't require a college degree. Over the years, there have been advances in technology that have made coal mining safer, but it's still a risky job, as we saw in 2010 at the Upper Big Branch Mine in Raleigh County.
We turn now to West Virginia, where 25 coal miners at least have died. Four remain missing after a huge explosion at a Massey Energy coal mine.
The bodies of the four missing miners were found over the weekend, bringing the death toll to 29, making it the worst U.S. mining disaster in 40 years.
This event still brings tears to Elizabeth's eyes.
Today is the 13th anniversary of Upper Big Branch mine disaster, where folks were killed because they were earning a living.
The 29 deaths from this disaster shook West Virginia to its core and got people across the country asking, why do we still send people into mines? To help answer that question, I asked a former coal miner.
Joe Manchin probably has a lot to do with that, and our governor, too.
Oh.
Our governor, Jim Justice, is a coal baron. He owns a lot of coal interest. And so, you know, those are tough hills to climb, you know.
That's Joe Opyoke, Elizabeth's dad. And he may be onto something. Senator Joe Manchin has spent nearly 20 years in political leadership in West Virginia, including stints as governor and secretary of state. Here's an ad Senator Manchin put out 4 years ago, highlighting his love of coal miners.
I'm Joe Manchin. I was born and raised in Farmington, West Virginia, and this is what I'm fighting for. A strong military, securing our borders, and keeping our promises to our veterans and our miners.
He's made a good living off of coal, and financial disclosures show that the majority of his investment earnings come from a coal brokerage company he started in 1988, which deals with coal waste. The current governor, Jim Justice, is the wealthiest person in West Virginia. He inherited a coal mining business from his dad and built a business empire based on, you guessed it, coal. So it's hard to make change in West Virginia when your leaders have been in office for so long and they are so entrenched in a single industry. But times are changing. The U.S. is facing a power shift, one that may very well challenge the throne of King Coal, even in West Virginia. A West Virginia company is mining the sun to provide communities with clean and affordable energy. Solar Hauler was started in 2013, and leave it to a West Virginian to introduce the word hauler outside of, well, the holler. For the uninitiated, a holler is Appalachian speak for the valley between two mountains. It's here in the shade of the mountains that we find our pioneer, Dan Conant. Dan says he wants to continue the state's energy legacy through more sustainable resources.
We've always been an energy state, and even before coal, there was charcoal. All through the mid-1800s, we had timber to make charcoal. Then we turned into the age of coal, and more recently, Marcellus shale. So, energy is just kind of in our blood in West Virginia. It's what we know how to do. It's what we identify as, just like Wisconsin identifies with cheese and Michigan with cars. It's the same thing for us in energy.
Dan was born and raised in West Virginia.
I'm from Shepherdstown, West Virginia, in the Eastern Panhandle. Tiny little town, got 1,500 folks.
Growing up, Dan remembers counting down the days until he graduated from high school and would leave West Virginia. He attended Allegheny College in Pennsylvania, where he studied environmental science and politics. All along, Dan says he planned to return to West Virginia to work in renewables. But at that point, in 2007, the industry didn't exist yet in the state. So, Dan moved around the country, then spent a couple of years working at the U.S. Department of Energy in its solar research office.
By that point, I was feeling a lot of guilt about having left. And as a state, we've just had a brain drain for such a long time, and I didn't want to keep contributing to that.
Dan left his job at the U.S. Department of Energy to create Solar Hauler.
I decided to do things a little differently. I really liked working with nonprofits and kind of mixing policy and finance and project development. So when I was starting up Solar Hauler, the original dream was for us to be a financing company, actually, to help put solar on churches and homeless shelters and other nonprofits around the state. We really wanted to flip the script and make it so that solar was going first on the organizations that needed it most, and wanted to avoid a situation where it was just country club folks getting it.
To do this, Dan needed a new business model. He created one of West Virginia's first benefit corporations. That label allowed Solar Hauler to consider factors beyond the bottom line when making decisions. Solar Hauler could still operate as a for-profit business, but also have a social purpose. And in Dan's case, there were many social purposes. Perhaps the most important were providing the Hauler communities access to an affordable and sustainable source of power. But making it happen wasn't easy. Dan says he started by working with his community's nonprofit organizations.
I got shut down by the State Public Service Commission for trying to sell power to the church. They said, no, you're not allowed to do that. You're violating the utility's monopoly on selling power. So without that, we lost access to all the tax credits, all the incentives that businesses and homeowners could get, but nonprofits were just completely out of luck on. So without the ability to do that, it kind of threw my whole business model into shambles.
Dan had to get creative. He convinced nearly 100 families and businesses to install an energy control device on their water heaters to sort of game the power company. The device was remotely turned on and off based upon the demands of the energy grid, and the saved energy was then sold back to the utility company. The proceeds were used to fund the company's first project, the installation of solar panels on Shepherdstown Presbyterian Church in Dan's hometown. From there, the company was quickly overwhelmed with requests for solar panel installations, and Dan soon realized they didn't have a workforce to meet the demand.
Really, what mattered to me was, number one, we needed a workforce, needed people who knew how to do this stuff. And then number two, I wanted to send labor dollars back into the towns that were getting really hard hit by mine closures.
So he launched the first solar training and apprenticeship program in the state. Unlike typical CEOs, Dan knew that he needed unions. To his mind, no one does a better job training electrical workers than the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. And to train carpenters, he went, well, you guessed it, to the Carpenters Union. These programs helped with two key parts of the business, the wiring and the assembly of the solar panels.
West Virginia is the birthplace of the labor movement. We had literal wars between coal bosses and coal mine workers in southern West Virginia, with the coal bosses being backed up by the U.S. military. It was a whole chapter in our nation's history of people fighting for the right to organize and fighting for the right to have a weekend and not be paid in company script. So, and that was all coming out of the West Virginia coal fields. So this is something that just has been deeply rooted for the last 100 plus years in our state's history.
This collaboration helped solve Dan's problem, a lack of well-trained workers, and the community's problem, the loss of good-paying union jobs. Dan's carrying on that tradition of organizing West Virginia's most valuable resource, its industrious people. Labor problems solved. Next problem, how to find the money to bring solar to his neighbors in the holler. Putting in solar requires an upfront investment, but for the most part, the communities in the holler found it difficult to absorb the expense. So what did Dan do? He launched West Virginia's first affordable financing program for solar. To make this financing program sustainable, he needed access to the right federal energy subsidies, and this involved politics. He knew that this fight was going to be tough, but he wasn't alone. In solidarity with Solar Holler, the unions gave their support. They worked together to lobby for federal energy subsidies to make renewable energy more affordable in the state. Here's IBEW member Haley Stevens as she tells her story in this ad that played on TVs all over West Virginia.
I took 2 years of electric in high school, and I was the only girl in the class there. Here, I'm the only girl as far as installers go. I'm a single mom, too. I joined the union because it gave me options for health care and life insurance so that I know my son's taken care of. I like what I do. Like, this is the best job I've ever had. You think solar panels is more like California, you wouldn't think Appalachia would have any. It would be smart if the government would invest more in clean energy resources.
We started this episode by introducing you to two members of a mining family, Elizabeth and Joe Apioc. Coal dust runs in their blood. It all began with Elizabeth's great-grandfather, who came to the U.S. from Hungary around 1910 to work in West Virginia's mines.
What's funny is I found the town where they were from, and I was at a Hungarian restaurant about 2 months ago, and I asked, what do you know about this town? And she's like, oh, they're strong people. She was like, I would not want to mess with them. So
strong like horse.
Yeah.
Elizabeth's great-grandparents settled in Marion County at the head of the holler. I defined holler earlier in the episode, but it's one thing for me, a former Wall Streeter, to talk about geography. It's quite another to hear it from a West Virginian like Joe.
A holler is the space between two mountains. And usually you go, you drive up, there's always in a holler, there's always a creek in West Virginia, there's always a mountain on your right, a hard road, and then a creek, and then the railroad, and then a mountain on the left. That's all there's room for. And that holler will go so far until it can't go anymore because another mountain will be in front of it, and you can't cross it. So that's called the head of the holler. And all the way back where that creek dumps out and the railroad track and the hard road dumps out, that's called the mouth of the holler.
Joe spent his working years in the mines, as did his dad. But Elizabeth works with Solar Holler as a solar home evaluator. She wants to help communities in West Virginia find cheaper, renewable alternatives to the expensive power provided by Appalachian Power and their coal-burning plants. Her sales pitch is not so much convincing people climate change is real, it's about basic math.
Most of the time, it doesn't matter what people think politically of what's going on in DC or in West Virginia. They know they're going to have an extra $20 a month in their checking account. And that's huge. You know, for some people, that's two cups of coffee. For people in West Virginia, that can be life-changing money over, you know, over the month, the course of the year. Over the next 25 years, they can see where they're saving $30,000. That's, you know, that's what they make in a year. So it's powerful to be able to see these folks get it. And don't get me wrong, people don't think it's real. They're like, so then that's when they'll come back 2 years later and go, Elizabeth, okay, I'm ready now. And I always welcome them to the family, because that's what we are, is we are a family of pretty much pioneers, crazy solar pioneers in coal country.
Coal provided lifelong employment for many members of the Opioak family, but Elizabeth wants to replace it with solar so that the next generation won't have to go through what her grandfather did to earn a living.
He had black lung. He had multiple cancers. The day before he died, I took him to the hospital and he had taken his shirt off. He was getting a lung biopsy. And I had saw a protrusion on his breastbone. And I asked the doctor what it was, and it was a melanoma leaving his body. Cancer was exploding out of his body. I saw what the coal mines have done to both of my grandfathers. I saw what they've done to my dad. I've seen what they've done economically in North Central West Virginia. And I knew that I needed to do something else. I didn't want my son to break his body, break his back, to make a living for his family. I mean, Cole put food on my table. Cole put braces on my teeth. You know, they sent me to school. So I'm grateful for what Cole has done. But we need to think of something else.
Elizabeth says Solar Hauler gives coal country an opportunity to see that there are other ways to earn a living in Appalachia.
West Virginia has always been the leader in energy production, if it's by coal or oil and gas. And so why not just add one more egg to our energy basket here in West Virginia by going to renewables?
In the opinion of this podcast host, this is an extraordinary story, an inspiring story. We've just spent a few minutes in a space that lives up to West Virginia's tourism moniker of being wild and wonderful. But to my mind, this marketing slogan just doesn't seem to do it justice. Justice, an interesting word. Extractive industries have powered the economic engine of the world. But what we've come to learn is that the world has limits, and we've tested these limits. Today, coal is not what it once was in the U.S. Now, almost 40% of our nation's energy comes from natural gas. There are some seismic shifts going on. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, renewables surpassed nuclear in 2021 and surpassed coal in 2022. Solar in coal country seems to be kind of like a psychological game changer. Solar Hauler is the story of pioneers who challenge the way we do business, the way we treat our workers, and the way we support and nurture our communities. Their efforts are the kind of energy that powers us forward. And perhaps Elizabeth said it best, solar is yet another egg in the basket, a fitting metaphor for this Easter week. You'll find links in the show notes for more information about benefit corporations and about solar energy. We hope you're inspired to consider what you might do in powering your own life. Next up on What Does It Profit, we're headed to North Carolina, where we meet some folks who are inspired by their community's industrial past to put workers to business and reimagine its industrial future.
We're creating dignity for folks that often go unnamed when you pull on a, you know, a pair of socks or put on your sweater. And so what's so important to us is that the faces of the Southern working class is seen and heard from, and that they have a stake in this really vital, important green economy that's emerging and scaling.
What Does It Profit is a production of the Solidarity Economy Workshop at Georgetown University. The show is hosted by me, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. Jordan Gaspore is our senior producer. Our sound engineer and designer is Mark Bush. Our season 3 researchers and assistant producers are Sophia Chen, Hannah Woodford, and Andy Fang. Music for What Does It Profit was composed by Nick Pennington. Special thanks on this episode goes to our friends at Heartland Capital Strategies. Support for What Does It Profit is provided by the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor, the McDonough School of Business, and the Capital Applied Learning Lab at Georgetown University. And just before we let you go, remember, never stop asking yourself, in the work that you do and the investments that you make, what does it profit?